Welcome to this week's Ox Talk, Tuesday, 12th of December, 2023. This week's local news items were selected by Margaret Simpson and Christine Churchill and recorded at home by Christine Churchill and Chris Orme. The copying and distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful and the technical officer is David Field. Today's sunrise is at 8 a.m. and sunset is at 5 to 4. At the end of this edition, the last for 2023, there is a piece of seasonal music, and then we start with a greeting from Margaret Simpson.
Hello, listeners. On behalf of all the Ox Talk volunteers, I'm sending you our very good wishes for an enjoyable Christmas. We are now taking a short break, as we cannot guarantee the pouches will be delivered to you because of all the extra Christmas cards that need delivering. Ox Talk should drop through the letterbox again around the 18th or 19th of January 2024. On your behalf, I will be thanking the Ox Talk volunteers for their continuous help and support in producing the weekly Ox Talk. Wishing you a very happy new year, good wishes throughout all of 2024, happy Christmas, and that's from Margaret, the chair of Ox Talk.
A talented crochet fan is getting in the Christmas spirit with an incredible knitted postbox topper. Featuring everything from Christmas trees and angels to Santa to cute reindeer and seasonal decorations, this festive creation has popped up in Park Road in Farringdon. Knitted characters made by Yarn Bombers have appeared on postboxes, railings, lampposts and bollards across Oxfordshire in recent years, with members of the public sharing their sightings on social media. A collection of knitted snowmen in woolly hats, a Christmas tree, Christmas pudding and a Santa suddenly appeared on a postbox in Carterton in the lead-up to Christmas 2021. The creators, most of whom want to stay anonymous, say they are adding some festive cheer to passers-by and some are helping to raise money for charities.
Oxford University Press has named RIS the word of the year for 2023. RIS is widely used on social media to mean style, charm or attractiveness, the ability to attract a romantic or sexual partner. It's believed to be a shortened form of the word charisma. RIS can also be used as a verb in phrases such as to RIS up, which means to attract, seduce or chat up. The word emerged from gaming and internet culture. Its usage peaked in June when Spider-Man actor Tom Holland was asked in an interview with BuzzFeed about his own RIS. He answered, "I've no RIS whatsoever, I've limited RIS." Other words in the 2023 shortlist, which was opened up to head-to-head voting by the public across social media and the Oxford Languages website, included Swifty, an enthusiastic fan of the singer Taylor Swift. De-influencing, the practice of discouraging people from buying particular products or of encouraging people to reduce their consumption of material goods, especially via social media and parasocial, at designating a relationship characterised by the one side, unreciprocated sense of intimacy felt by a viewer, fan or follower for a well-known or prominent figure, typically a media celebrity.
Parish Councillor Lorna Berrett has been named Councillor of the Year during an event at the House of Lords. It was part of the Star Council Awards run by the National Association of Local Councillors. Ms Berrett has spent 8 years as a parish councillor for Botley and North Hinksey. Before that, she led a campaign which stopped plans to tear down Botley's Elms Parade shops and local housing and helped to set up the community's debut website. As chair of the parish council, her projects included erecting bus shelters, equipping playgrounds and setting up public art installations in the Westway Centre. During the pandemic, she initiated the Botley Responders Volunteer Network. She said, "I really enjoy being a councillor and I try to build on all the amazing work by volunteers and workers across our community.
A pretend road created on school grounds is teaching young children about road safety. Over the last 15 months, staff at Marcham Preschool and Marcham Primary School, which share a site in the village near Abingdon, have been working on a project to develop the outdoor learning space and transform an area of grass into a road track. Children can ride bikes and scooters, learn about road safety, take turns and use their imaginations. Early years teacher at Marcham Preschool, Nikki Sanford, said, "From our initial idea a little over a year ago, it's incredible to see the amount of support for our project and how this has developed. The children are able to explore and play together while learning important life skills around road safety, also developing skills to support learning across the whole curriculum. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone involved. The impact of this work will go on for many years to come."
Clarkson's Farm star Caleb Cooper has revealed more about his working relationship with Jeremy Clarkson. Mr. Cooper is one of the stars of the Amazon series, which follows Mr. Clarkson's efforts to run Diddley Squat Farm in Chadlington near Chipping Norton. Season 3 has been filmed, but transmission dates have not yet been revealed. 3 years ago, the launch of the series made Mr. Cooper, 25, a star. He told Round and About magazine that he gets on with Mr. Clarkson. Mr. Cooper added, "I've taught him a bit of farming, but he doesn't listen. He's got a little knowledge and that's dangerous. But he taught me about the world of television. We do quite a bit together. We go to the pub. If we've had an argument the day before, we might not see each other for 2 days. We argue. I don't think that's ever going to change. But at the end of the day, I'm right and he's wrong every time." Mr. Cooper has a new book out, Britain According to Caleb, published by Quercus, which celebrates Britain's unusual traditions. "I kept a voice recorder in the tractor and just chatted into it. Win-win," added Mr. Cooper. While he enjoys duck racing, he's reluctant to try wife carrying. "Not because my missus is heavy, but because I know that if we lose, I'm going to get a bollocking," he said. "My other half is very competitive, you see. I can carry hay bales all day long, but carrying a load precious to you is quite scary." The father of two joked that it was a miracle he has two children, as he hates being touched. Next month he is taking part in a tour of venues starting on January the 25th. He added, "I'm a bit nervous, but I hope everyone will be welcoming. I don't like crowds and I think everyone respects that." The farmer said Chipping Norton was the most amazing place in the world. He added, "I just hope everyone wakes up in the morning like I do and feels I'm home. This is where I'll spend the rest of my life, on a farm nearby, I hope." Scenes from season 2 of Clarkson's Farm showed clashes between the Diddley Squat Farm team and West Oxfordshire District Council over planning applications for a car park and a restaurant, with Jeremy finally granted permission to extend the car park in June. Tickets for The World According to Caleb, Caleb Goes on Tour, are on sale now and can be purchased via caleblive.com.
Children are invited to join a festive trail at a garden centre. Notcuts Garden Centre in Newnham Courtney is holding the free fun activity from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. until December the 23rd. Clues will be hidden around the centre for little ones to uncover and solve a puzzle for the chance to win a prize. The centre also promises appearances from Santa from noon to 3 p.m. for the next 2 weekends. Centre manager Alex Harding said, "We're thrilled to offer families a unique and free festive experience with our children's Christmas trail."
A teacher and her partner are embarking on a 2,650-mile hike from Canada to Mexico and are hoping to raise money for charity. Sarah Ellen Wooler, a former secondary school teacher at Bartholomew School, Ensham, and Richard Fletcher, ex-head of servicing at Williams F1, resigned from their long-standing careers to tackle the Pacific Crest Trail, PCT, through the US states of Washington, Oregon, California, and continuing south. Ms. Wooler and Mr. Fletcher chose to hike southbound from Canada to Mexico. To complete the journey, both individuals needed permits, which come with strong competition. The pair were fortunate to obtain their PCT permits with start dates just 2 days apart. Equipped with rucksacks weighing between £25 and £45, containing food and camping gear, the expedition is a demanding endeavour. Mzwula said, "We've both climbed the managerial ladder and enjoyed the view, but now it was time to climb some other mountains." In the wake of personal and global events, including her sister's multiple sclerosis diagnosis and the COVID-19 pandemic, Mzwula and Mr. Fletcher decided to re-evaluate their lifestyle. They made the move of resigning from their jobs, focused on making the most of a five-month break on the PCT. However, the trip is not just about personal reflection, it's also a fundraising mission. Sarah is raising cash for three causes close to her heart. She hopes to allocate 60% of the raised funds towards new private multiple sclerosis, MS, treatments for her sister, Amy. She also plans to distribute the rest of the funds, 20% each, between Bartholomew Young Carers and the MS Society. The fundraising campaign details are available via their blog at fletchlivesonthetrail.com, where you can also follow their journey. Having started on June the 26th, Mzwula and Mr. Fletcher have only 180 miles remaining on the challenging trail. According to the Pacific Crest Trail Association, between 15% and 35% of hikers successfully navigate the 100 marathons in length trail. This massive undertaking is equivalent to Mount Everest's ascent 16 times and involves risks such as severe weather, dehydration, and potentially deadly wildlife. Mr. Fletcher is no stranger to daunting hikes, having already completed the Appalachian Trail, a total of 2,183 miles, in 2014. With only 5% of PCT hikers choosing the southbound route, the couple's venture is an extraordinary feat. Individuals who want to help Mzwula and Mr. Fletcher with their charitable causes can follow their journey and make a donation on their blog.
Blenheim Palace has announced its biggest exhibition ever, featuring globally renowned British fashion brands. The event, Icons of British Fashion, commences on March the 23rd, unveiling a varied assortment of fashion clothing, accessories, archives, drawings, photography, and patterns from exceptional designers, all displayed amidst the palace's own collections. Brands such as Barber, Bruce Oldfield, John Muir, Lulu Guinness, Stephen Jones, Millinery for Christian Dior, Temple London, Vivienne Westwood and Zandra Rhodes, among others, will be featured. In addition, Sir Winston Churchill will be celebrated as the country marks his 150th birthday. Kate Ballinger, Keeper of Palace and Collection, said, "We are incredibly excited to finally unveil what's been in the making. This exhibition will give visitors an insight into the fascinating world of British fashion in such a unique setting. Icons of British Fashion is the first of its kind at Blenheim Palace, and to be able to partner with some of the most widely celebrated designers and brands in the world to bring together a collection of garments, accessories and artefacts is something we're immensely proud of. Visitors can enjoy the show for free with any valid Blenheim Palace tickets. For a closer look at what's on offer, interested individuals can visit the Blenheim Palace website, where tickets can also be purchased."
A police officer who saved a father and daughter from a Cowley house fire has been awarded for his bravery. PC Patrick Ward was given a Chief Constable higher commendation last week after his heroic actions during the suspected arson in Edmund Road, Oxford, last year. He said he was very proud and complimented the other officers who responded to the blaze, several of whom were also commended. The officers attended the house fire just off Cowley Road on July the 15th after PC Emma Tennant came across a large quantity of smoke at around 6:15 a.m. The house was ablaze from the rear first floor window and there was smoke coming from windows at the front and rear of the house. Officers managed to get through the front and back door and evacuate as many people as possible. PC Ward entered alongside PCs Daniel Hurst, Kerry Ingham and Ashraful Kamali, while PC Tennant remained in the doorway, ensuring her colleagues were accounted for. PC Ward met a 37-year-old man and an 8-year-old girl who were father and daughter on the stairs struggling to get down, so the officer grabbed the child and brought her out of the house, allowing the dad to get out too. A teenage boy then followed them. The father then said another person was inside, so PCs Ward, Kamali, Hurst, as well as PC Isabel Beatty and DS James Woodcock all entered the house, which was still ablaze. They searched the ground and first floors, with smoke filling the house, before being told that everyone had been accounted for, so DS Woodcock ordered them to withdraw. Several of the officers received treatment for smoke inhalation from the ambulance service on scene. PC Tennant also arranged for police cars to be moved so the fire engines could get closer, as well as starting and coordinating neighbour evacuations. She received a commendation alongside DS Woodcock and PCs Beatty, Ingham and Kamali, while PC Hurst will receive a higher chief's commendation. DS Woodcock said, "It is a great honour to receive this award, and I am pleased my team is recognised for the sterling work they do on a daily basis." PC Ingham added, "At just after 6 a.m. on our last night shift going into rest days, the last thing we expected was to have a house fire just down the road from the station, even less so being presented with a parent and child trapped inside and unable to get out. All of the officers involved have also received bravery awards from the Police Federation for their response to the fire."
Every Christmas, Oxenford House offers lunch and a warm welcome on Christmas Day and Boxing Day to those who might otherwise be alone on those days. The lunch period will be between 11:45 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. Many people have commented over the years that the experience of being welcomed into our home at Christmas has been a truly joyful one. Oxenford House is based in the Glebe, Cumnor. There's no charge for lunch, but unfortunately transport cannot be arranged from the house. Bookings will need to be made in advance and by the deadline of the 18th of December, as the number of places available are limited. Please contact Sue Stubberfield, General Manager, on 01865 865 116, or email manager@oxenfordhouse.co.uk as early as possible to secure your place.
This time last year, a calendar dedicated to celebrating the landmarks of the M40 was flying off the shelves thanks to national press coverage prompted by a story in Oxford Mail. The calendar sold in its thousands as the many fans of the M40 motorway revealed themselves, and now Motorway Vistas, the company behind last year's Christmas gift, have decided to create a new range of merchandise for the large number of M40 fans out there. Angie Allgood, MD of Motorway Vistas, said, "We were inundated with messages of thanks from a huge range of people, retired policemen who'd patrolled the motorway for decades, even people who'd built the motorway and the service stations. It was quite special to realise how genuine and widespread people's affection for the M40 was. Despite hundreds of requests to produce a new calendar for 2024, co-founder Jim Thornton said they had decided against it. He added, "There aren't any other landmarks to feature. I mean, we were stretching it just to come up with 12 landmarks for one calendar's worth. We had hundreds of requests to make calendars for other motorways, from the M62 to the M5, but we don't have the necessary knowledge to do them proper justice. So we decided to double down and make something that enabled M40 fans to show their appreciation not just on one wall of the house, but out and about at work and on the road itself." Motorway Vistas have created four pieces of merchandise for the M40 fan, featuring specially commissioned artwork by graphic artist Peter Beddo. He has turned the most popular M40 landmarks into stunning works of art that now adorn mugs, T-shirts, tins of travel sweets and air fresheners. The featured landmarks are the Stoke Church Gap, northbound view, the Umberslade Obelisk near the top of the M40, and the iconic Middleton Stoney Water Tower just north of Oxford. The products, which are now available online at www.motorwaysvistas.com, are already flying off the shelves even before they have been officially advertised. "We're intrigued to know which landmark will sell the most," said co-founder Angie Allgood. "Obviously, the Stoke and Church Gap is the most recognisable to the majority of M40 drivers, but the Middleton Stoney Water Tower is a genuinely beautiful landmark to drive past. So far, we've had no requests to produce a pylon alley, the infamous invented landmark of a row of electricity pylons, but you never know. Motorway Vistas is a business set up by four M40 enthusiasts, Jim Thornton, Peter Beddoe, Angie Allgood and Michael Lee. This is their second year of existence following the success of their landmarks of the M40 calendar.
Peeved motorists who are routinely waiting up to 3 hours at a gridlocked city roundabout want portable toilets to be installed at the roadside. The calls come as roadworks at Botley Interchange continue to cause traffic misery for Oxford's commuters. Shadow Highways chief Liam Walker backed the idea and claimed it would keep the traffic flowing and bladders going. But National Highways, which is carrying out the work until next year, said it would cause too much of a safety risk. Drivers have suffered traffic chaos since upgrade work started on the bridge at the interchange in September. Oxford motorist Mike Tustin has regularly been stuck for several hours at the roundabout off the A34. In a complaint to National Highways, he said, "Can I suggest you at least put some decent toilets in the two laybys on the A420 approaches to Cumnor and Botley? Spending 2 to 3 hours stuck in queues must mean that your department should be paying for public toilets to help hapless drivers. If you want to avoid this additional cost to you and your team, you need to sort out the traffic management to increase capacity." Fellow driver Graham Jones told the Oxford Mail, "It illustrates how bad the situation has got. You would think it was a joke that people are asking for this, but it's no joke." Another motorist, who asked not to be named, said, "If you're stuck in queues for that long and you need the loo, what other options do you have?" Mr. Walker, a Conservative councillor who is Shadow Cabinet Member for Transport on Oxfordshire County Council, said, "Ideally, it would be better if National Highways managed this congestion better, but it's clearly right they put provisions in place for motorists stuck in the congestion. Portaloos could become the unsung heroes of these roadworks, keeping the traffic flowing and bladders going." But a spokesman for National Highways resisted the calls for portable toilets. He said, "Temporary toilets along the A34 would present a significant safety risk as drivers would have to exit their vehicles and cross a live carriageway to access the facilities." National Highways has made changes to the roadworks at Botley Interchange as it looks to reduce traffic issues. The spokesman said, "We are working to resolve the issues with congestion at the A34 Botley roundabout following a switch of our traffic management. We have installed yellow boxes, keep clear road marking and additional signs which will help keep traffic at the junction flowing. As with the first phase of the work, we expect that the situation will settle, but we will continue to review the situation over the coming days." A house fire believed to have been caused by a tumble dryer prompted a warning from firefighters to check appliances. Three fire engines from Slade Park, Abingdon and Rooley Road fire stations raced to the house in Beresfield at around 9:30 p.m. last Saturday night. When they arrived, crews were met with a well-developed fire on the ground floor, with heavy smoke building throughout the property. Incident commander, watch manager Paul White said, "Thanks to the swift actions of the homeowners who closed the internal doors as they were exiting the property as quickly as possible. After they were alerted by working smoke alarms, there were no injuries and the fire was contained. An early call to 999 allowed for the swift attendance of the fire service to extinguish the fire as quickly as possible. These quick actions unquestionably helped to save the property from far more significant damage. The fire is believed to have been caused by a tumble dryer, and this serves as a timely reminder to check your white goods in your home and test your smoke alarms to ensure they are working correctly. On Facebook, the fire service thanked neighbours who rallied around. They said, "It was fantastic to see such great community spirit and all coming together."
Shoppers have been disappointed by the lack of cashiers working tills in a refurbished supermarket, saying it has left self-checkout as the only reasonable option. Sainsbury's Witney reopened at the end of November following a revamp. New lines in the store include a kitchen deli, new cheese and charcuterie displays, and an upgraded sushi counter. There is also a new Starbucks cafe inside the supermarket. The refurbishment also included the reformatting of the checkout offer. There are now just 6 service tills alongside 23 self-service tills. There are 8 self-checkouts for customers doing a smaller shop and using baskets, 9 larger self-checkouts for customers doing a larger shop using trolleys, and 6 smart shop checkouts. But the move has proved a divisive issue on social media. While some shoppers preferred to scan their own shopping, others were mildly frustrated to find that there were so few cashiers available. One joked on Whitney's Spotted Facebook page, "I got kicked out of Sainsbury's this morning. The manager asked me what I was doing in the break room. You don't even work here. I said, I just finished using the self-checkout, so clearly I do." The post received 644 likes. Another customer posted, "That's quite right. Asked to join the pension scheme also." And a third said, "Should have asked for your staff discount. Mind you, they'll be charging you to park next." Also hinting that the supermarket was saving money on staff, which may not be passed on, one poster said, "The self-serve checkouts are great. My shopping bill is reduced dramatically." However, another social media user welcomed the self-scan option as long as it works properly. She said, "I'm not a massively chatty person and I have a busy full-time job. I'm not someone whose only social contact is via shopping, but there is often one poor person trying to whiz around fixing the scanning issues." Sainsbury's said the changes to the store have not impacted the number of staff, as its colleagues are multi-skilled and have received training to become expert in different departments around the store. It said it regularly reviews the services available in all its stores to make sure it offers the most convenient experience for customers, upgrading equipment, meeting increasing customer demand for a service, or reducing a service which has become less popular. Customers still have the choice of paying through service tills, self-service checkouts, and smart shop, it said.
4 Oxford eateries, including a Chinese restaurant, have been handed new food hygiene ratings. A rating of 5 stars was awarded by the Food Standard Agency to 2 restaurants, 1 takeaway and a social club. The happy news was delivered to Mint Kitchen and Lounge at Temple Lounge, Hotspot Chinese Restaurant on Cowley Road, Six's Social Cricket at the Westgate, and Solo at the Mad Hatter on Iffley Road. A non-ministerial government department, the Food Standards Agency, makes sure food is safe, what it says it is, and healthier and more sustainable.
Fewer women in Oxfordshire completed cervical screenings for cancer last year, new figures show. The NHS England statistics indicate 67.6% of 211,569 eligible 25 to 64-year-olds in Oxfordshire were adequately screened as of March the 31st. This was down from 69.1% the year before and below the target of 80%. Nationally, 68.7% of eligible individuals aged 25 to 64 were adequately screened this year, a fall from 69.9% in 2022. Chief Executive of Joe's Cervical Cancer Trust, Martin Hunt, said, "It can sometimes be difficult to attend for a variety of reasons, including work and childcare commitments, anxiety and misinformation surrounding the test. But these tests are vital. They can prevent cancer. The charity added that it is incredibly frustrating to see targets missed for the 19th year in a row. It said NHS England's recently announced goal of eliminating cervical cancer by 2040 is going to be challenging. The national decline in coverage was primarily driven by a fall in 24 to 49-year-olds being screened. In Oxfordshire, 64% were screened as of March this year, a fall from 66.1% in 2022. Of eligible 50 to 64-year-olds, 74.6% were tested, down from 75.1%.
The recent rise in misogynistic content online has sent society backwards in their treatment of women, according to a new study. A professor from Oxford University, Deborah Cameron, has said the return of overt misogyny is visible both in politics and in popular culture. She added, "Though the misogyny of the 21st century is politically backward-looking, its style and mode of expression belong to the present. Despite there being an increase on the number of laws on women's rights, women are still prone to online abuse, such as rape threats, which can deter them from taking on public positions in society. This recent research has suggested that prejudice, discrimination and abuse should not be regarded as yesterday's problems, as they have now evolved in ways which reflect the conditions of the present day, making it an ongoing, unresolved problem." Similar content can be seen in Professor Cameron's book, Language, Sexism and Misogyny, which analyses the way sexism and misogyny are expressed and enacted in today's advertising and media. It highlights the trending issues of views from Andrew Tate and Donald Trump, and assesses the rise of concepts such as trad wife, or traditional wife, and manosphere, which are websites and blogs where men express opinions on fragile masculinity, but also express hostile views on feminism and women's rights. The book, which has been published by Taylor and Francis Group, also discusses how social media platforms such as TikTok have allowed a space for promotion of misogynistic ideas, which has caused a rise in online threats and abuse against women. Due to the recent rise of online threats against women, it's believed that such hostility may be causing women to step down from important roles, such as political roles, which are enhanced by other potential factors, such as being granted less time to speak than men. The Oxford professor said, "Surveys consistently find that most women who use the internet have some experience of online abuse, just as most have some experience of being harassed offline, on the street or on public transport." In order to combat the growing presence of misogyny against women online, Professor Cameron does believe that women have begun to use language to fight back. This is by inventing new terms, reclaiming old slurs and campaigning for changes in media reporting, dictionary entries, or the language used in job adverts. Professor Cameron said sexist and misogynistic language is everywhere. It's insidious, and in an age where we're often told it's no longer a problem, the forms it takes can be subtle. To fight it, we need to be able to see it and understand how it works, and that's really what this book is for. Young people being supported by a mental health charity will have the opportunity to perform on stage for Christmas. The group, who are given support and advice by Nye's House in Bicester, will be rocking out on guitars, drums and on the mic at a Christmas concert being held at the X Services Club. The promising performers have been attending free music sessions delivered by charity Community Albums, funded by Sanctuary Housing and Bicester Village's Unlock Futures Fund. A spokesperson for Nye's House said, "For many of the young people, this is their first time on stage and an activity they never imagined themselves being able to do. The focus is on having a go, having fun and celebrating the team's achievements, with everyone encouraged to participate." Kane Chamberlain from Community Albums said, "The aim of the sessions at Nye's House is to provide a supportive and encouraging environment in which everyone can come together to learn and play music. Each individual's circumstances and background are different, but music is a common thread that bonds the individuals and enables them to channel their emotions into music. The concert is an opportunity to demonstrate to the young people and their families that they have something to be proud of." The free concert is taking place on Sunday, December the 17th at 7 p.m, with family, friends and members of the community all invited to join the festive celebrations. For more information, those interested can contact Mr. Chamberlain at Community Albums on kane@communityalbums.com. Nye's House is a blended youth and wellbeing service that offers what they claim is a new way to access and receive mental health support. It aims to reduce suicide, self-harm and poor emotional and mental well-being in under 30s by providing suicide prevention and holistic mental health support through the teaching of life-saving skills and strategies. The charity was founded by Jem Barrett after her daughter, Dean Nye, committed suicide in 2017. Sanctuary's stated mission is to build affordable homes and sustainable communities where people choose to live. Community Albums aims to build better communities through music and media. It devises and delivers bespoke projects and programs for those wanting to use music and media to develop people and give communities a voice. Bicester Village's Unlock Futures Fund claims to focus on empowering women, unlocking the futures of young people and improving mental health and well-being in Bicester. The fund offers Bicester-based charities, non-profit organisations and social enterprises an opportunity to create and progress projects that can bring about real, sustainable change and truly make a difference in the local community. A rise in passenger numbers has prompted changes in Oxford's bus timetable. The 2 and 2A services from Kidlington to Oxford will operate every 7 to 8 minutes between Monday and Saturday and every 10 minutes on Sundays to meet increasing demand. Timetables have been revised to reflect journey times more accurately, improving punctuality and reliability for passengers. Stagecoach West has also updated the S9 route schedule, improving punctuality and adjusting trip timings.
An 85-year-old car park attendant in Abingdon has raised nearly £2,000 for children in need this year by sporting a range of fancy dress costumes at work every day throughout November. Ernie Edwards, who works at the ticket booth at Coxeter House Car Park in Stratton Way, has raised £1,834.41 for the charity with his sartorial efforts, continuing an annual tradition he started after working in a shop where staff wore fancy dress for children in need. Mr. Edwards also sets himself the goal of beating the previous year's total, which he has once again achieved this year, surpassing last year's total of £1,105. This year, Mr. Edwards alternated between four main outfits every day, positioning a fundraising bucket and a sign outside the booth he works in for the users of the car park and passers-by to throw money into if they wished. He said, "It feels absolutely wonderful to have raised this much. I'll definitely be doing it again next year, although I haven't thought about what to wear yet. I didn't expect to raise anywhere near the amount I did, so I've given myself quite the target to beat. Some people who donated came down just to see me, saying they'd seen me in the paper or in pictures posted on Facebook. Thank you to everyone who donated. I really enjoy doing this every year."
A new Greek restaurant is opening on the site of a former vintage store in East Oxford. In February, vintage store Rain closed in Cowley Road after serving customers for 17 years. Now, Klontian Mehta, who runs the Love Coffee chain, is transforming the unit into a Greek restaurant called Central. An opening date of this Sunday or Monday is planned. Mr. Mehta, who grew up in Greece, said, "We're just putting the finishing touches to the restaurant. We're not far off now. We have an alcohol license and we're looking forward to opening and serving traditional Greek food. Of course, we'll listen to our customers and we can try to adapt the menu to include the dishes they like." In March last year, Mr. Mehta, also a barber, opened his first Love Coffee in a former flower shop in Cowley Road. It was such a success, he opened another Love Coffee shop in High Street. Mr. Mehta is originally from Albania and grew up in Greece. The father of two has been living in Oxford for more than 5 years. The coffee he sells at competitive prices, combined with the feta cheese, spinach and custard pies, keeps customers coming back. The location of the first shop, halfway along the Cowley Road, creates a captive audience of shop and office workers and students from both universities. Mr. Mehta said last year, "We are exactly halfway along Cowley Road, not far from Tesco, and there are lots of people around. A lot of my customers are Oxford Brookes University students." He added, "When you're young and positive, I think you can do anything. Of course, there's a lot of hard work involved, and sometimes I'm working from 6 a.m. to about 8:30 p.m, but it's worth it." Now, with a new restaurant to run, he'll be even busier. "We have room for about 60 people in the restaurant," he added. "It's a good-sized unit right in the heart of the Cowley Road. That's why I'm calling it Central." Rain was popular for many years with students and local shoppers. Following its closure, owners put up a notice saying, "After 17 years of much thought, we've decided that the time has come to close our doors and focus on pastures new. All is not lost. We look forward to welcoming you in our London stores in Soho and newly opened 2,800 square feet store in Stoke Newington. We also have an online store, rainvintage.com, with over 1,000 items available to buy online, and this will be developed further through the year."
This year's Turner Prize has gone to an Oxford artist who is known for his work with unconventional materials. Jessie Darling, 41, who was born in Oxford and now lives in Berlin, received the £25,000 Art Award at Winter Garden in Eastbourne, East Sussex, for the exhibition of his work in the past 12 months. His award-winning display was described as conveying a familiar yet delirious world that unsettles perceived notions of labour, class, Britishness and power. His display included a full-sized roller coaster turned into the skeletal form of a woolly mammoth. His sculptures, made up of faded Union Jack bunting and metal pedestrian barriers, were shown in two places. No Medals, No Ribbons was at Modern Art Oxford in Pembroke Street, and Enclosures was at Camden Arts Centre. Mr. Darling claimed that former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher lessened the teaching of art in schools because it was not economically productive. He added, "She sort of paved the way for the greatest trick that the Tories ever pulled, which was to convince the working people of Britain that study, self-expression, and what the broadsheets supplements describe as culture is only for particular kinds of people from particular socio-economic backgrounds. I just want to say, don't buy in. I'm talking to the public. I'm talking to the British public. Don't buy in. It's for everyone." Previous winners of the Turner Prize include pottery maker and contemporary artist Sir Grayson Perry, film director and visual artist Sir Steve McQueen, and artist Damien Hirst. The host of this year's prize was British rapper Tiny Temper. Mr. Darling pulled the Palestinian flag out of his pocket and waved it amid the conflict in Gaza and Israel at the end of his acceptance speech. Born in Oxford in 1981, Darling studied at Central St. Martin's at the University of the Arts, London, and completed a Master's in Fine Art at University College London's Slade School of Fine Art in 2014. He works across sculpture, installation, video, drawing, sound, text and performance, and in 2021 released a collection of poetry called Virgins. The 2023 Turner Prize jury, chaired by Tate Britain director Alex Farquharson, included Martin Clark, director of Camden Art Centre. The award goes to an artist born or based in the UK for an outstanding exhibition or presentation of their work in the past 12 months. The prize will mark its 40th anniversary next year and return to Tate Britain for the first time since 2018. An exhibition of the Turner Prize shortlisted artists is at Towner Eastbourne until April the 14th.
Pet owners are being asked to donate their dog's blood in an effort to save the lives of other canines. Pet Blood Bank UK is appealing for dog owners around Abingdon to register their furry friends for a donation session at Boundary Vets. The initiative is particularly important during the holiday season, when the stock of life-saving blood for dogs lowers, putting at risk the lives of poorly pups. Dogs between the ages of 1 and 8, weighing over 25 kilos, and that are fit, healthy and confident, are perfect as donors. The bank said that over the month of December, Pet Blood Bank sees a dip in donations as many people go away for the holidays and are busier than normal. Pet Blood Bank UK functions similarly to the Human Blood Service and operates across the country. Every donation a dog gives can help to save the lives of up to 4 other dogs. Dogs in Abingdon, as well as all dogs across the UK, have access to the life-saving blood should they ever need it. The donation itself lasts only between 5 and 10 minutes, while a full visit may extend to 40. Dogs will also receive a goodie bag and a toy to take home.
What Oxford needs above all things is a good system of electric trams, says Mail on Sunday columnist Peter Hitchens. In an exclusive interview with the Oxford Mail, the erudite writer and commentator shared his thoughts on Oxford's public transport systems and the expansion of the city. The Conservative rhetorician, 72, believes low-traffic neighbourhoods, LTNs, are a secondary measure, and if the council wants to stop traffic going through neighbourhoods, then it needs to make it less necessary for people to use cars. He said, "I hate cars. I wish they'd never been invented. Civilization took a wrong turn with these motorized ox carts. But I understand why people have to use them. I'm sympathetic to people who have to make a living by driving a van and who are not rich. I think their lives are made very difficult by LTNs. This isn't a personal outrage of mine. It doesn't affect me. But these people, in any case, need to carry equipment around. It's different." Mr. Hitchens, a frequent panellist on Question Time, Talk TV and GB News, is in favour of creating a world in which cycling is normal. He said, "The key to it is to create really good public transport. What Oxford needs above all things is a good system of electric trams. I could design it for them, radiating from the centre out to the park and rides and crossing over so that this ridiculous thing where the buses only go to the centre and you have to change can be solved. Buses will never work because people don't trust buses. Trams are more predictable. You know where they're going. And trams have a romance about them which attracts people. Oxford needs trams." Mr. Hitchens went on to praise Strasbourg, his favourite city, for the way its tram system actually improves the old streets. Aggravated by the lack of direct services between certain significant parts of Oxford, he added, "Isn't it ridiculous that there's no direct, regular service between the city centre and the John Radcliffe Hospital? It doesn't exist. There's also no direct service from the park and rides to the John Radcliffe, which is the biggest destination probably in Oxford." Oxfordshire City Council has been contacted for response. When faced with a question about Oxford City Council's 2040 local plan, which claims 25,000 more houses need to be built to accommodate increasing demand, Mr. Hitchens said, "Well, they make these figures up. They don't need to do it. They just decided to expand Oxford. In the end, they will expand it out of existence. It will cease to be Oxford once it becomes too big. That's my worry. If they want affordable housing, then they should buy back the council estates. Oxford used to have really quite good council houses. If they're worried about people not being able to afford living in the city, bring them back." In response, a spokesperson for Oxford City Council said, "Our local plan proposals are based on an independent assessment of the number of homes we'll need to sustain forecast job growth between now and 2040.
An arboretum is a collection of trees from around the world specifically designed for botanical study and education. The trees may be labelled for identification or organised in ways to assist their study. Some arboretums specialise in particular types of tree. For example, one growing conifers is called a pinetum. The idea of planting specimens of trees can be traced back to Egyptian times when pines and cedars were brought back from Syria, ebony from the Sudan, and frankincense trees from Africa. Kublai Khan is said to have collected evergreen trees and had them planted in what is now Beijing. An early example of a European tree collection is the Trasteno Arboretum near Dubrovnik, which was in existence by 1492. The use of the term arboretum didn't come into use until the late 1700s or the early 1800s. It was probably first used by John Loudon in one of his gardening publications in 1833, when referring to the Hackney Botanic Garden Arboretum, begun in 1816. This was opened free to the public for educational benefit every Sunday. Loudon himself was commissioned to design the Derby Arboretum for local mill owner and philanthropist Joseph Strutt in 1840, now recognised as Britain's first park and one of the inspirations for Central Park in New York. The establishment of arboretums flourished during the 1800s, driven by the host of new tree species introduced from around the world, together with a desire of wealthy landowners to embellish their estates and with a Victorian urge to educate the public. Oxford University's Harcourt Arboretum in Newnham Courtney dates back to the early 1800s. Westonbirt Arboretum in Gloucestershire and the National Pineetum at Bedgebury in Kent to the 1850s and Batsford Arboretum in Gloucestershire to the 1880s. This was continued into the 20th century with Thorpe Perrow in Yorkshire started in the early 1900s and Winkworth Arboretum in Surrey in the 1930s. The trend continues to this day. The Yorkshire Arboretum started in 1959 as a joint exercise between the Castle Howard Estate and the Royal Botanic Gardens and Kew. In more recent times, arboretums have become as much a public attraction as a place of botanical study. People are now encouraged to visit them for their pure enjoyment of the trees and their settings, so much so that at peak times such as the autumn, bookings may now be required. A more recent development along these lines is the National Memorial Arboretum, established in the 1990s in Staffordshire alongside the National Forest, but primarily designed as a year-round national centre of remembrance. Closer to home is the arboretum being developed at Thenford near Banbury by Anne and Michael Heseltine. This now covers some 70 acres and features a collection of some 3,000 different trees and shrubs. We are lucky to be in reach of three of the best arboretums in the country, including the National Arboretum at Westonbirt, Batsford Arboretum and Harcourt Arboretum. Westonbirt is perhaps the most important and widely known arboretum, covering some 600 acres with some 15,000 trees and shrubs and 2,500 species of trees from around the world.
Fans of pop girl bands will be in their element next summer with the latest acts unveiled for Blenheim Palace's Nocturne Live concert series. Chart toppers Sugar Babes, Spice Girl Melanie C and All Saints singer Shaznay Lewis will play a night of fun-loving pop at the Woodstock Stately Home on Saturday, June the 15th, the final day of the four-day festival. The stars join previously announced acts Crowded House, Sheryl Crow, Turin Breaks, Chaka Khan, Sister Sledge and Fatback Band, who will all play the palace's 10,000-capacity Great Court. Headliner Sugar Babes exploded onto the music scene with their critically acclaimed debut single Overload and went on to become one of the most successful British girl bands of all time with 6 number one singles, multiple platinum-selling albums and numerous awards to their name. Big singles include hits About You Now, Push the Button, Too Lost in You and the epic Freak Like Me, a cover of an Idina Howard R&B tune mashed up with a sample of Gary Numan's 80s electro-pop classic Our Friends Electric. It sold almost 400,000 copies. Since reforming in 2022 with their original 1998 lineup of Mucha Buena, Kaisha Buchanan and Siobhan Donaghy, Sugar Babes have played at Glastonbury and performed live to over 500,000 fans. This included a sold-out show at London's O2 Arena. They also delighted Oxfordshire fans with a show at the Big Festival on Blur star Alex James's farm in Kingham near Chipping Norton. As a member of the Spice Girls, Melanie C sold more than 85 million records, releasing 3 studio albums, 13 singles, and winning a host of awards, including a Brit for Outstanding Contribution to British Music, before going on to solo fame with over 3 million album sales, 2 number one singles, and 6 top 10 singles, including the international hits I Turn to You and Never Be the Same Again. Shaznay Lewis is an Ivor Novello and Brit Award winning singer-songwriter, best known as being part of the multi-million selling girl band All Saints. Shaznay was the key songwriter of the band, penning their iconic discography, including number one singles Booty Call, Pure Shores, and Never Ever. Sugar Babe said in a statement, "We're excited to be performing next year at the stunning setting of Blenheim Palace. To get to play alongside our friends Mel and Shaznay is going to make the evening even more special." Since its inception in 2015, Nocturne Live has presented shows from the likes of Lionel Richie, Elton John, Kylie Minogue, Nile Rodgers, Lauryn Hill, Noel Gallagher, Gregory Porter, Van Morrison, Tears for Fears, Gladys Knight, Elvis Costello, Simple Minds, and Ennio Morricone. Tickets for Sugar Babes, Mel C and Shaznay Lewis start at £45 and are on sale from nocturnelive.com.
If the BBC was a family and lived in the house next door to you, it would be the neighbour from hell. That's the verdict of some of the most experienced local newspaper editors in the country, who now regard the BBC as little more than a state-funded juggernaut on course to suffocate independent journalism in every city, town and village in the UK. The BBC seems to be on a mission to be the only show in town, having taken an axe to its much-loved local radio stations, so it can start writing news stories online, which you can already get from local newspapers, which are currently battling with tech platforms like Google, Meta and Apple. Unlike Google, Meta and co, the BBC's funding is guaranteed by the licence fee, meaning the British public is underwriting the biggest threat local journalism has ever faced. It's splashing your cash on local news websites and making it increasingly difficult for proud, independent news sites to survive in the long term. How is it doing this? Back in October 2022, the BBC laid out plans to strengthen local online news provision in communities across England. The scheme includes the creation of 130 additional posts. More journalism would normally be welcomed, but the BBC's plans put at risk thousands of existing jobs on titles known to their communities for generations. The BBC says the plans will deliver a stronger and more distinctive local online news service for 43 different local areas in England, all available on the BBC News website and app. What it fails to adequately resolve is the impact this will undoubtedly have on the diverse but fragile independent news sector in each community. It's our reporters who hold local decision makers to account, campaign on your behalf, research and share essential information, hold up the mirror to local successes, and have no other interest than in telling the truth. We're also the turn-to source for the BBC when it wants to know what's going on. Most local reporters share their stories and videos with readers through the opaque algorithms of the giant global tech companies like Facebook and Google. As the BBC carries no advertising and is entirely free to read, its stories tend to be prioritised by the big search engines over our journalism. At the same time, the BBC uses its vast monopolistic strength to promote its content, so it has a huge anti-competitive advantage. While independent local journalism is regulated by the tough Independent Press Standards Organisation, the BBC is watched over by Ofcom, which seems largely indifferent to the harm it's causing. Editors are convinced that as they juggle the realities of the cost of living crisis, the BBC, immune from the same commercial pressures, is fixated on stealing their readers, their businesses, and the jobs of their journalists. It either knows what it's doing and doesn't care, or is ignorant to the impact it will have. What a shameful legacy that would be for Tim Davie, the 17th Director General of the BBC. If the BBC wants to fairly compete and support a diverse and trusted local news reporting ecosystem as it claims to do, it must act now. It should focus its efforts on providing a snapshot of life in its 12 English regions, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, and abandon its rollout of the 34 local websites, which directly compete with publishers who have cared about local news online during the last decade when the Beeb repeatedly showed it didn't. It could do so much more to link to local publishers, helping them to thrive rather than trying to close them down. Even such a simple act, repeatedly asked for over the years, seems beyond the BBC. The government is taking welcome steps to tackle the market abuses by Meta and Google through the Digital Markets Bill, which will create a level playing field between publishers and tech platforms. Yet, the BBC will remain as an equally potent threat, all but unchecked by Ofcom. Earlier this year, we called on the BBC to be a better neighbour. It's time the BBC showed that it's not the biggest threat to local, community, independent journalism, but a global broadcaster focused on delivering the very best television and radio in line with its charter.
Tyler Goodrum has used his time out of the Oxford United starting lineup as a learning experience in order to become a better player. The 20-year-old winger established himself as a key player towards the end of last season, playing an instrumental role as the U's steered clear of relegation from Sky Bet League One. His two goals at home to Cheltenham Town and at Forest Green Rovers helped United collect crucial wins, which ultimately kept the club in the third tier. That form continued into this season with three goals in his first five League One games, including a match-winning brace in the 2-1 win at home to Charlton Athletic. However, he then found himself in and out of the side, culminating in the current three-game run in the league where he's come off the bench in every match. The last league game that Goodrum started was the 2-0 win away to Lincoln City at the end of October. The United Academy graduate hasn't let it get him down, though. Instead, using the experience to learn more about himself and the game. He said, "I speak to my partner and I speak to my agent about it, and we know there are going to be times where I'm not necessarily going to be how I was at the start of the season. I know I haven't quite been where I want to be in the last month or two, but I feel like I really used it as a learning curve on how to adapt and get out of those down periods. It's one of those learning things where I'm still getting used to it and trying to be that young, energetic kid, but with a lot more responsibility, which I quite enjoy. I'm still trying to learn and figure myself out, what to do and where to be, but it's always a learning curve and I'm always trying to learn." The major reason for Goodrum's time in and out of the starting lineup is the depth of the U's boast in wide areas. Goodrum finds himself battling with the likes of Stan Mills and Josh Murphy, while Marcus Brown and Carl Edwards also provided competition on the wing prior to picking up hamstring injuries. Furthermore, United switched to a three-man defence with wing-backs under previous head coach Liam Manning, a system which saw Billy Bowden and Ruben Rodriguez occupy two number 10 roles behind Mark Harris up front. If you look at the squad depth that we've got, especially in the wide areas, it's unbelievable quality, said Goodrum. It really shows how good the squad is, and the fact that you've got three or four unbelievable wingers in this league shows how good you have to be. Anyone deserves to start, but if you don't start, it's how you come on and affect the game.
Protesters sat outside Oxford Crown Court to defend the right of juries to make conscience-based decisions. A group of 17 Oxford residents silently held signs outside the court as part of the Defend Our Juries public campaign, which had organised 50 such acts of protest across the nation. The principle of jury equity is a power which enables a jury to reach a decision that directly contradicts the law if they feel the law is unjust. A former teacher who attended the protest, Jeannie Donald McKim, said, "I was sitting because I believe that our courts are under pressure from a corrupt government to criminalise legitimate peaceful protests, and jurors should be reminded of their legal right to acquit according to their conscience. Our rights to protest are being cancelled. Our right to a fair trial are being undermined. The legal system is compromised by those judges who will not remind jurors of this fundamental fact. So we are here to do their job for them." A vet and foster carer, Jessica Upton, added, "I'm distressed that key information is being withheld from juries by our courts. I trust 12 members of my community to make the best decision for the community when given the full facts. Juries should be supported, not blindfolded and muzzled." Other attendees said they were concerned specifically about the apparent undermining of jury trials in the case of non-violent climate activists. The case of the Colston Four in 2022, where the four defendants had removed and dumped a statue of transatlantic slave trade Edward Colston into a Bristol canal, has been cited as an example which showcases the principle of jury equity. Jurors acquitted the defendants after a trial, despite evidence of criminal damage. Former Supreme Court Judge Lord Sumption said in an interview with LBC that juries acquitting people who were plainly guilty in political cases simply because they sympathise with them undermined the rule of law and dishonoured the juror's oath. A spokeswoman for protesters outside Oxford Crown Court today referred to the previous announcement to prosecute protester Trudy Warner and troubled defendants had found themselves in after explaining their beliefs and motivations in court. Anne Taylor, a retired teacher, mother and grandmother, said, "I'm here as an ordinary member of the public, horrified by this threat to our democracy." Jericho resident Maggie Bicknell added, "Jurors cannot reach fair conclusions about actions without all the facts, and facts include motivations and reasons for acting." A jury famously acquitted the civil servant Clive Ponting in 1984 after he exposed government misinformation to the public and Parliament concerning the Falklands War.
NHS workers received a festive treat with free beverages from Starbucks. Starbucks offered all NHS workers a free drink this week. It was the fourth year of the initiative, run in association with NHS Charities Together, with this year's being larger than ever before. Alex Rayner, General Manager at Starbucks UK, said, "We wanted to thank NHS staff across the UK for all the work they do, and as a token of our appreciation, we brought back the free tall beverage. We know how much NHS staff have enjoyed taking part in this special day, and it's something we look forward to year after year. So we're thrilled to see our partnership with NHS Charities Together flourish." Starbucks extended its offer by delivering Frappuccino, mocha-flavoured chilled coffee and toffee nut latte premium instant coffee to 19 hospitals without a nearby Starbucks branch. Free caramel waffles were also offered at NHS hospitals. The initiative is part of an ongoing partnership with NHS Charities Together that helps support over 230 local NHS charities. Louise McCathy, Director of Fundraising at NHS Charities Together, said, "This day was an opportunity to show how much NHS staff and their work are appreciated and valued across the UK."
Hundreds of Oxfordshire children were in contact with mental health services in the year to September, new data shows. The NHS digital figures indicate around 540 children in the former NHS Oxfordshire CCG area had been in contact with mental health services, while more children than ever accessed them across England. There was an almost doubling of open referrals through the coronavirus pandemic, as 710,000 children nationally accessed mental health support. Chief Executive at mental health charity Young Minds, Laura Bunt, said, "Instead of action, young people get broken promises in the form of scrapped plans and missed opportunities. We need the government to turn the tide on this emergency. It must commit to reducing prevalence and tackle the reasons why so many young people are struggling with their mental health. We need an ambitious plan that matches the scale of need, focusing on prevention, investment, and improving services. some 465,000 children were waiting for a mental health appointment following a referral at the end of September, up from 250,000 at the end of September 2019. But in Oxfordshire, this fell from around 7,055 at the end of September 2019 to 70 this year.
Star Wars words are apparently now ingrained in the English language as well as the Oxford Dictionary, a study found. Jedi is used as often as jewel and dizzy, and in more than a third of uses of Star Wars words, there is no direct reference to the film franchise at all. Christina Sanchez-Stockhammer, a professor in English and linguistics at Ludwig Maximilians Universität München, carried out the research. Experts investigated how often vocabulary from the series appears in everyday lives and looked at words such as Jedi, lightsaber, Yoda, and Padawan. Professor Sanchez-Stockhammer said, words from Star Wars have reached the highest level of integration into the English language. Star Wars has become such an important part of popular culture that things like Yoda's role as a mentor or the appearance of lightsabers can be assumed to be familiar to large sections of the population and thus form the basis for innovative language uses. The example of lightsaber shows that Star Wars is now even somehow part of our physical reality. She added that all of the words used in the study already appear in the Oxford English Dictionary. The word Jedi occurs more than 4 times per million words, meaning it is as common as general vocabulary words like jewel or dizzy.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280, and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.